It's time for A Message in the Bottle, brought to you every week by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in studio. Good day. Happy spring to you, sir.
Yeah.
Woo.
Listen, I got bad news. I'd like to say I was going to continue to be a guest here, but just got the word that I got my scholarship offered to Tulane. I know no one was expecting that, but I found this little firm out in California that photoshopped my head onto the picture of an athlete, and Tulane went for it.
Well, it was good that your parents were
Tulane
willing
not
to...
implicated, by the way. I should get the caveat there. What a dumb story before we get into wine.
Yeah, because...
Wow!
You know, who needs help more than... white kids with rich parents.
I was like, Felicity Huffman's married to William H. Macy, and they needed to pay somebody to take their kids' SAT for them. Super. You know what? Let's talk about wine.
Now, if Lori Loughlin goes to jail, does that mean her kid is going to have to stay with Uncle Jesse?
That's right. Then you want to talk about a full house? She's going to learn all about what a full house is.
Fuller big house.
Big house. Oh, we kid. But seriously? Anyway, in a day, I thought, you know, I'm pleased to announce I'm taking a little respite for the next couple of days. My children, my wife and I are going to Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, very nice.
Going to do some water parkage and stuff like that. So yeah, in a frenetic Tuesday of, you know, my life going, you know, any day you leave before a vacation is just the most impossible day of your life.
Right.
And that provided a little bit of just, wow, at least you're not these people.
Exactly.
That's right. When my kids end up at a really good college, I assure you it's not because I have enough money to pay some dude. God, that's amazing. Anyway, so seeking closure from that. We're talking closures today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm not even good at the sayings. But anyway, we are. So, yeah. So, as a reminder, in March, we talk about the packaging of wine and how, you know, those precious drops of liquid get to you. This is one of my more, my favorite topics, the closure thing, because it's such a superficial thing that bothers so many people. And so hopefully this segment will help to dispel some of those myths, because we're going to talk about cork and screw caps and Stelvins and all that stuff. So let's talk. So cork, the classic method cork. As you'll recall, we talked about bottles last week, and around the time that cork started being generally used for stopping up wine and other liquids is around the same time that high temperature forges were created to create better, thicker forms of glass. And so, because of course, cork being a sort of a spongy thing is pressing outwardly against the glass, thus creating the seal that you so desperately need. And if you didn't have, you know, strong glass, you can guess what happens. Cork is made out of suberin. Suberin is a hydrophobic substance. What does that mean? It means that basically it pushes water away. It doesn't, you know, water can't get through it. It has difficulty getting through the molecules, and it is found in the bark of the Cusis suber, which is the cork oak, most of which are found in southwestern Europe and northwest Africa, and fully over 50% of the annual production comes from not just Portugal, but one specific region, the Montado region in Portugal. So a huge, huge part of the local economy there. And it is from the Iberian Peninsula that idea of using cork drifted northwards and was actually found by, amongst other people, the famous friar Dom Perignon, who brought that idea back to his home place of Champagne and said, you know that the bubbly... I got an idea. Cork trees, they typically live about 300 years. And they start producing, however, at 25 years. So it's got to be one of these things you sort of start with anticipation that your son will take over your firm or daughter and be the one to harvest that one. It is harvested every 9 years. And then the cork will grow back. And essentially, I mean, this means it's a pretty environmentally friendly industry, which is pretty sweet, right? And that's kind of important to realize, you know, when we're talking about the viability and necessity of coming up with alternatives. So we'll talk about why perhaps you would want an alternative to such an environmentally friendly thing. There are natural cracks and fissures in corks, of course, and in different cork more or less, that allow some gas flow, oxygen being the obvious question here, for still wines, but the compression of the sparkling bottle prevents the escape of the captured CO2. This is part of what allows aging, and that's why people think that cork is essential for aging. However, it's important to realize, and when we continue on to more impermeable closure methods, it's important to remember that there is still, when the wine is bottled, there is air trapped in that liquid, and there is also what's called the eulage, which is the gap between the wine that you see, the wine and the cork, or the wine and the... That is air. That's oxygen. So it is... It has a little bit of oxygen. It is gradually oxidating slash aging, whatever you want to call it. It is essentially the same thing over time. But cork in a still wine that is not hyper-compressed will also allow a little bit of air passage slowly. But why not cork? Why not cork? Well, first of all, it's expensive. And as more and more wineries come onto line, there's more and more demand for the better cork. And if you'll sometimes pull a cork and notice that it's, you know, almost an inch longer than other corks. There's some winemakers that really, really demand that so that they get, you know, the best possible closure and things like that. There's also something in cork, and we've talked about it a lot on this program, called trichloroanisole, TCA, which causes corkage, which is that smell when you open a bottle. And this is why I always advocate smelling the cork and the first glass of wine you pour from a bottle. And if it smells like a bilge, or a library that was underwater for a long time, or potatoes. Potatoes sometimes have a sort of a TCA taint to them when it's like a funky potato, it smells bad. If it smells like that, it's probably infected with trichloroanisole. Put the cork back in the bottle, bring it back to your friendly wine merchant. They will replace it with another bottle or something of your choosing and return it up the line, because it is a product flaw and you can be compensated for it, provided you don't drink the whole bottle and just suffer. And that's on you.
It was really bad, I wanted to finish it. I didn't want to waste any.
I have had it happen. I've had people bring it in and, we drank a couple glasses, but I just wanted you to smell it, Eric. And I'll smell it and be like, I feel really bad for you.
Why did you drink that?
Is definitely one of the things that has led to people being like, oh, I don't like wine. Oh, I had it once and it was just awful. If you had something that smelled like a rotten potato, yeah, I wouldn't want to drink that either. Wine's supposed to smell fruity and minerally and, you know, stuff like that. So what are the alternatives? Well, of course, there's screw caps. And, you know, I've been in the industry long enough to know when it started to really become a more generalized thing in the decent wine category. Of course, we've had screw caps forever. And my favorite anecdote is that, you know, I used to watch Night Court as a kid. Probably shouldn't have at the time. I learned a lot of things. Dan Fielding, you know, John Larroquette has a woman, I believe it was Marcy, in a hotel room, and he's got a bottle of wine, and the maitre d' says, shall I unscrew it for you, sir? And it was a joke, but now it's not a joke. It's absolutely like everywhere. And especially people like, a lot of Austrians and Germans, they'll put, you know, screw cap, enclosures on even their higher end wines, because bear in mind, they can still age. We just discussed that. And this is a, you know, between 5% and 10% of all cork has some level of TCA in it. Maybe they just don't want to risk their product. Maybe they don't want to deal with it. That's fine. I completely understand that. But what you all need to understand is that it is not the sign of an inferior wine if it has a screw cap. I cannot emphasize that enough. Right. The wine can age. It is not TCA proof, because there are some, you know, wineries or whatever that have a TCA infection. I mean, that's a thing. I think I may have smelled 2 or 3 bottles in my entire career that had like a screw cap and were TCA infected. Some appellations ban the use of them, including, I found this very interesting, Valpolicella Classico. A wine from, you know, northern central Italy, light and fruity and fun, but you cannot call Valpolicella Classico, or anything made in that region, the legal names you use a screw cap, which actually caused one of the more major wineries to just declassify their wine because they wanted to use a screw cap. They're like, this is a, you know, young, fresh, fruity wine. We're not going to, you know, joke around with it. So pretty interesting. But yeah, absolutely. And so the wine we're drinking today, by the way, we're drinking a wonderful Marlboro. It is Marlboro, but it's not in the bay that everybody knows. It's kind of slightly to the west. It's actually really cool. The vineyard, it sits right above a salt lake, And so it's got sort of a minerally brininess that I think comes from that. It's really, really cool. It's very beautiful. But this is Glaze Brook Sauvignon Blanc from, I'm going to mess this up. I'm not, there's a lot more consonants than I'm used to, but the Nagatawara winery. And it's absolutely fresh, fruity, wonderful. It's our wine of the week. And it has got a screw cap. And it is still really good. And they're the highest quality. Shocking.
It tastes like spring.
It tastes like spring. Mm. How appropriate. That's what we needed. We needed spring. Mm. It feels so good drinking it down and feeling it on my face outside. Other enclosures before we run out of time. There is the Stelvin, which I mentioned. The Stelvin is a sort of a glass stopper. And again, you see it mostly in northern Italy, Austria, basically all the former Axis countries, let's be frank. I'm not making any judgments or political. It just happens to be that. But you're seeing less and less of it because, frankly, it's very expensive, and sourcing the bottles and stuff to go with it, it's. I wouldn't be surprised if it kind of goes away entirely. But you may see it. If you ever open a bottle, you'll peel back something, or maybe some of the bottles actually don't even have a capsule on it. They just show you the sort of the glass enclosure. Don't be afraid of it. It reseals, by the way, just like a cork or a screw cap would, so it's not like something that you're going to break off and never be able to reseal. But that's called a Stelvin, and it's you will see it, especially, as I said, in some of the Central European stuff. The other one, synthetic cork. I mean, another big one for people who want the aesthetic of the cork, but they don't want to risk the taint of TCA or anything like that. So very, very popular. Does tend to screw with some of those very expensive, fancy bottle openers like the Rabbits and all that. And it does not work for any of those CO2 pressured ones. It'll break those things because they're plastic. They're not actual cork, just FYI. So don't do that. But they're fine. Don't be offended by those. Most are biodegradable but not recyclable. I know that they are working on that, and they're in fact now making a lot of things out of bamboo as well and other sort of alternative fake corks so that they're friendlier for the environment. So stay tuned there. Then the last one is my favorite, and you're definitely seeing less and less of this, but it's an Australian brand called Zork, and it's a synthetic cork that you sort of peel off the top of, and it's pretty neat. But as I said, the price for that has more than doubled in the past couple of years. So you're seeing a lot less of it. As I said, we're running out of time, but I do want to talk about two events that we have next week before I finish up. And of course, I've been mentioning these for about a month and a half now. We do have a couple tickets left for Wednesday's Chateau Musard History in a Bottle Evening with Chateau Musard event. Chateau Musard, to remind you, is the very historically important Lebanese wine estate that has survived civil war and trends and everything else, and makes some of the world's most enjoyable and age-worthy wine. Tickets for that are $30 a head, and we do still have some. We're just going to be a fantastic vegetarian and vegan Lebanese spread from Mediterranean Cuisine by TS, who are local caterers, and they are lovely. And, of course, a nice presentation by the importer. And then on Thursday will be our regular monthly tasting. It is free and open to the public. We will have Elizabeth from Broadbent Selections as well, tasting some of the younger wines from Chateau Musard. I encourage, please do come out to one or both. I'm super excited for the Wednesday one. So if it sounds tempting, grab your tickets now because I think they're going to sell out. So aside from that, we will see you next week. We will talk about boxed wine, and the cost of shipping wine and things like that, so that everybody gets a good idea of what that's all about. So see you next week.
Thank you, Eric. Enjoy your respite.
I will. Cheers.